You're listening to Intermezzo on KRWG 90.7. It's my pleasure to welcome back into our studios Richard Dowling. Welcome, Richard.
Nice to be back. I can't believe it's been so many years. You look just the same.
Thank you. So do you.
As musicians like to say, you've got a big fermata over your head, not a halo. A fermata means you hold.
A long pause. So you're traveling, as you do and have for a long time, on the Piatigorsky Foundation roster. And this is a foundation started by Evan Drachman, who was here the last time you came by, the grandson of the great cellist Gregor Piatigorsky. Tell us a little bit about the mission of this foundation. At one point, you were on the board. Are you still on the board?
I'm still on the board. Evan and I are the two performers that are also board members. I've been with the foundation for 19 and a half years now, and I've played coming close to 1,000 Piatigorsky Foundation recitals all over America. Evan started the foundation in 1990, 23 years ago, to honor the legacy of his grandfather, Gregor Piatigorsky, the famous Ukrainian-Russian cellist. Piatigorsky was one of the most famous classical musicians in the 20th century. Yo-Yo Ma probably couldn't have a career today if it weren't for Gregor Piatigorsky. And Evan is one of his maternal grandsons. That's why Evan has a different last name, Evan Drachman. And Evan and I have been friends for a long time. We've played many of those 1,000 concerts together. I also play as a soloist, and I also accompany some of our singers or our other instrumentalists, and it's really terrific. We go to 23 states. We would go to all 50, but the United States is a big country, and we're very fortunate that New Mexico is one of our 23 states. We get our funding from the Maddox Foundation, partial funding from the Maddox Foundation, and so I've been here performing over in the southeast corner of the state where they don't get too much of anything.
And that's part of the mission, is to bring the classical music to out-of-the-way places where people don't get to hear live music that often. Gregor Piatigorsky himself was famous for riding the trains and traveling to remote parts of this country, and that's what you've been doing in these 1,000 concerts.
Right.
So not just remote places, but also unusual venues. And so I know that you've been, that over the years, musicians from the Piatigorsky Foundation have performed in, of course, schools, but hospitals and prisons, maybe, and right, and soup kitchens and homeless shelters. Tell us a story about that kind of experience of bringing music to people who really don't often get to hear classical music.
Well, for one thing, being a pianist, I can't travel with my own instrument, so I have to play on the instrument that's provided at each venue, and every piano is like a blind date. You never know really what you're going to get. Some of them are what I call PSOs, piano-shaped objects, and you just have to do the best you can. Of course, at a place, for example, Arizona is also one of our Piatigorsky Foundation states, and I played a recital arranged by my cousin, who's a big supporter of the foundation, at a men's homeless shelter where she teaches GED courses there. And I had some trepidation about it. I played in all kinds of venues, but the unknown is always a little scary. And that concert and the subsequent concerts that we've done there every year now have been among the most successful, because those men have very little of anything in their lives. So when we come to them, it shows them a great deal of respect, and you get the respect back. That's the wonderful thing about this foundation, is the reciprocity. You put energy out to an audience that doesn't know what to expect, and they sense that it's music at the highest quality level that they have never heard before, and they respond automatically. You don't have to be educated to love music. You just have to open your ears and open your heart and listen and enjoy. And it's very gratifying for the performer to see such happiness for a short period of time. You know, for me, playing music blocks out all the stress in my life, and for the audience too, just for that hour, they get released from all of the worries of their lives if they can just focus and concentrate and just let the music pour over them. And that's why we all love music. That's why you're here at the radio station surrounded by music all day. I'm sure you feel like you have a very lucky job, and I do too.
Absolutely, to be surrounded by all these wonderful musicians and these composers who left behind this legacy, this incredible tradition. So, Richard, I remember from our last talk several years ago that you grew up in a three-piano home. So I thought to myself, well, maybe there was one for classical, one for jazz, and a player piano for rags.
That's right.
Your three big interests. Tell us a little bit about growing up in a home that obviously was very musical and when you decided this was what you wanted to do in your life.
Well, I started piano lessons at 5 just because my mom wanted me to take piano lessons. So I was a typical suburban kid growing up in Houston. You know, I did swimming lessons and tennis and piano, and I had a million activities at school. So I was a typical, you know, over-budgeted kid, but I loved it. And piano was the thing that was easy for me. I started taking lessons on my aunt's old upright, and once I got good enough, I demanded from my parents a baby grand, and along with that used baby grand came this player piano. So that's how we ended up with three pianos, and that's how I fell in love with ragtime turn-of-the-century music. I started collecting rolls, and we would have jam sessions at home. My mom or my sister would get on the player piano. My dad would play the banjo. He was a self-taught ukulele and banjo player. And then I'd play the grand piano. And it was what the Germans call house music. You know, what people used to do 100 years ago. They made music at home. They sang. You know, somebody banged on a drum. Somebody might play the fiddle. Somebody played the piano. And that's how I grew up. It was a kind of an odd, you know, experience because people really weren't doing that even in the 70s and 80s. That had already started to die away. But I also grew up right when The Sting came out. That won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 73 or 74, Robert Redford and Paul Newman, and it featured the music of Scott Joplin, arranged by the wonderful pianist-composer Marvin Hamlisch. And I just was totally fell in love with that music like all of America did. Ragtime had lain dormant for 50 years. And thanks to Marvin Hamlisch and that movie, Scott Joplin was reintroduced to American mainstream culture. And really, ragtime is the basis for all popular music because of its syncopation. I mean, there really isn't any difference in the syncopation of Lady Gaga as there is with Scott Joplin. It's the same beat. Just different tunes and different harmonies. But America invented popular music with ragtime. That's our homegrown classical music.
Mm-hmm. And the earliest jazz, it turned into jazz.
Jazz evolved
too.
Out of ragtime. Ragtime is the Ur. It's the beginning, mm-hmm. You know, the big bang of popular music. And now it's taken over the world. Popular music has. Back 100 years ago, there were really only 4 kinds of music. There was concert music, which is what we call classical music today. They didn't call it classical because it wasn't old yet. Then there were patriotic anthems and songs, folk music, which could vary from country to country, and then, of course, sacred music. And that's it. That was your whole choice of music. So the concert music was the popular music of the day. And with the advent of ragtime, that really changed the face of the world. It split classical music, concert music, off from pop music. So America has revolutionized the music business worldwide.
Over this last about 100 years, let's talk a little bit about Frédéric Chopin, because you have 2 CDs, moving away from rag, although we'll come back to it. You have 2 CDs dedicated to his music, this extraordinary composer who died very young and left behind an enormous amount of piano music, a lot of very short miniature works and huge sonatas and concertos, almost everything for piano. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts about Chopin and when you play his music.
Chopin's music are masterworks, and very often, because I play jazz and ragtime, people will ask me, why do you want to play classical music? And I say, well, classical music is like Mount Everest. There's no real reason for people to go to the top. They could just be dropped off by a helicopter if they wanted to see the view. But the point is to get to the top. And there's no one right way to get to the top. Depends on the weather conditions. It depends on what the time of the year. And learning a masterwork like Chopin is like climbing Mount Everest. First of all, it's an incredible masterpiece, and the satisfaction you get of being able to play it is enormous. But Chopin was such a great melodist. His melodies are so beautiful. They're hummable. He was in love with singers. And so some of the best tunes ever composed were by Chopin. He made the piano really sing and took it away from being a percussion instrument. And I think if you ask any classical pianist, Chopin will be their number one favorite. So I'm not unique in that respect. I just feel very drawn to his music, always have, like many pianists. And the audience still loves his music. He's played every year thousands of times all over the planet. That proves that they're masterworks.
Mm-hmm. And he was Polish. He lived for a lot of his little adult life that he had in Paris and France. But it's interesting because some of his music are Polish dance forms, but not necessarily for dancing.
Right. Well, remember, human beings always love things that are exotic. So when I'm in New York, I say I'm from Texas. And when I'm in Texas, I say I'm from New York, because everybody loves a foreigner. So when Chopin moved to Paris, even though he had a French name, Frédéric Chopin, his father was French, his mother was Polish, he really was just a Polish kid. And so he played up that Polishness while he was living in France, because he could get a lot of mileage out of playing polonaises and mazurkas, Krakowiak, you know, inspiring the French audiences with his exoticism. Hmm. And so he knew what was good marketing. You know, every performer's got to have a gimmick, and that was Chopin's gimmick. And he loved his home country, but knew that that's not where the action was. The action was in Vienna and in Paris. So that's where he spent a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. And you probably have some Chopin in most of your recitals.
I do. And in fact, I've begun in the last few years, I've been playing a lot of the jazz and ragtime festivals around the country. And so I do illegal things. I play classical music at the jazz festivals, and I play jazz at the classical festivals, just trying to show that they're two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm on a kick where I take a Chopin tune and play it straight, and then I rag it.
Oh, wonderful.
Back to back, and that's what I do on my programs now, even for the Piatigorsky Foundation. And, of course, the crowd goes nuts, and anybody who's in the audience who's a classical musician, they snicker out loud when it starts, because they don't, they're so taken aback by it. But I don't think that Chopin, I'm not being disrespectful to Chopin. I'm just having a good time. I have to remember that I'm an entertainer, after all, not just, you know, head in the clouds classical musician. I mean, the idea is to entertain an audience and make them want to come back and hear another Piatigorsky Foundation concert or any kind of concert.
And one of the things that I think is done at all the Piatigorsky Foundations is that you talk to the audience and explain some of the music that you're performing.
That's part of our protocol, and Evan Drachman is a master at that. I've learned so much about talking to an audience in a non-technical way. We just tell anecdotes about the composers and about the pieces, and very often people come up to me afterward and say, oh, you know, I loved your playing, but I learned so much, and it was so great to know what to listen for. It's like, you know, having a personal tour of the museum. I mean, everybody loves to look at art, but if you don't understand or what a particular piece of art is about, and someone stands there and says, oh, look at this. This is what this painter did that makes this so unique. Then your appreciation goes up 100-fold just because now you understand it.
Absolutely. And I think people really appreciate, especially with classical music, people feel intimidated by it. You know, you were saying there was that split with popular music, and when it's explained and you just tell people, enjoy it. You don't have to be an expert
Evan and I and all the other Piatigorsky artists feel like we are musical missionaries, that we're going out on behalf of classical music across America and convincing people. You know, a lot of people say they don't like classical music. In fact, the biggest compliment I ever get after any concert, foundation or otherwise, is when usually a husband will come up to me who will break my hand shaking it so hard and saying, you know, I really liked your concert. You know, Mabel, my wife, dragged me to this thing, and I didn't think I was going to like it. I wanted to stay home and watch the game. But you were really terrific. And I think, you know, I convinced this person that thought he hated classical music and turned him into a music lover. And that, to me, means it was a success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many concerts are you giving a year, all told, these days?
Well, I probably do 5 or 6 tours for the foundation a year, and that's 8 or 9 per tour, per state. And then I have my legitimate concerts through my manager in New York. So I probably do between, 75 concerts a year or something, not including the music festivals in the summer. And it's a busy life. But if you're a performer, you need an audience, and you got to travel.
And you're doing that all the time, and it's wonderful. My guest has been Richard Dowling, and in case you missed the details earlier, he'll be performing tonight at the Good Samaritan Auditorium, one of the Piatigorsky Foundation concerts, and that's at 7 o'clock, about an hour-long concert, and then tomorrow morning at El Caldito Soup Kitchen here in Las Cruces, once again bringing music to people who don't necessarily have an opportunity to get to a concert. Thanks so much for joining us today, Richard. It's great to see you again.
Always a pleasure.